And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It has just turned 4 minutes past nine on this Friday. It's the 1st of November 2024 and I hope you're all very well indeed. And we've got a packed bumper show for you, as we always do on a Friday. We're going to be welcoming very shortly our panel of three guests to discuss some of the big stories of the day and the week, and we want you involved in that conversation as well. With that in mind, the lines are open right now for you to WhatsApp or text 086 60 25000. If you prefer, you can give us a call on 07491 25000, or emails comments at highlandradio.com. After 10, we've got the Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou McDonald in studio. You can watch her and all of today's proceedings on your smart TV or Fire Stick. If you're at home, just open up the YouTube app, go into Highland Radio Ireland, or we're out and about with you on that app, the Facebook app, and on the X platform. Right, let's say good morning first to Emma McGrath, teacher and co-director of the McGrath School of Speech and Drama. Good morning, Emma. How are you?
Good morning, Greg. Very well.
Good to see you again.
Good morning, everyone.
Yeah, long time no see. Cathy Donaghy, journalist and author of Finding My Wild. Cathy, great to have you back on the show. Good morning.
Thanks for having me, Greg. Good morning, everybody.
And we also have Charles Ward, 100% Redress Party general election candidate. Hi, Charles.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
Thank you for having us on today.
All the listeners too. Thank you.
No, it's good to have you on. And you're gearing up, we all presume, for November 29th. There's been much speculation over the 100% redress strategy and your decision to put your name forward to run for the election. So it's good to hear from you directly yourself. You know, what is the plan? What is the hope?
Our hope is to have somebody elected to be the voice, basically myself, to be the voice for defective concrete in Donegal, up in the Dáil. We feel we don't have proper representation currently at the moment, because we are in a humanitarian crisis and we've been abandoned by the government.
We know, any of us that follow it closely know, defective concrete is not just an Inishowen problem, it's a county-wide problem.
Yeah.
It's a West Coast problem, and who else knows where it might turn up. That being said, I think the epicentre still is in Inishowen, okay? And there were those with respect to you that polled extremely well in Inishowen, though you did yourself proud as well, right? I hope you understand that. I understand that. But that being said, what was the strategy of going with you and perhaps not someone else in the, in inverted commas, epicentre that polled more higher in the local elections, which is our clearest indication as to how things may pan out in the general election?
Yeah, I understand the point. Yeah, like, so if you look at it like this, my votes were 995, okay? That's what I went out. Ali Farns in around 2,000, Joy in around the same, okay? So what we are as a party is we got together, we've discussed where we need to run, how we need to run it, and the best way to do it. And democratically, the party have shown faith in me, and they think that I can get the job done. And I know that if given the right opportunity, I will take this party forward, and we will grow, and we will highlight the plight that we are currently suffering in Donegal. And there's nothing worse in Dublin than seeing somebody who's affected with defective concrete and being on the floor of the Dáil.
Some even within the movement have questioned the strategy, given the fact that, you know, there are two Sinn Féin TDs standing for election as well, and the they have promised an N10 scheme for, you know, homeowners. Not it doesn't sign up to every element of what people affected want, but they have promised from day one to work on this. There is some concern that someone has to go for you to be successful, Charles. Yeah. And there are some concerned it could be an ally, effectively someone who could be seen as an ally to the campaign. Now, I'm sure Pat the Coke Gallagher, Charlie McConnell Logue, and others would also argue they're allies. Okay, I get that, right? But I mean, theoretically, you could end up costing Padraig McLaughlin his seat, for an example.
For example, my seats that we're going to be targeting, Charlie McConnell Logue, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, okay? Anybody that's affected with defective concrete.
But but elections are a blunt instrument. You cannot specifically target seats.
Well, what I'm saying to you is this. People are going around saying that they're going to give 100% redress, okay, or their form of it. But the people, the defective homeowners, got together with the stakeholders and they produce the people's document. The people's document is what we need. Nothing else but the people's document. And everybody that have contributed to people's document have to stand up and basically back the people's document if we want to end this humanitarian crisis.
Yeah, okay. Kathy, in a month we'll know what the situation is. How do you think the election might play out here in Donegal? And you know, obviously Charles Ward, a party never existed before. Now they've four seats. You know, they've got a big... they got a big vote last time out, and they're building on that. How big an impact do you think they might have?
Yeah, I think it'll be big this time, Greg. You know, you only have to look around. I mean, I live in Inishowen. You only have to look around and see that, like, concrete blocks is like a tsunami. You know, and Charles is right. I would agree. It is a humanitarian issue that has not been recognised as such. I think in Donegal, perhaps it's our peripherality. I don't really know why this hasn't been sorted out, or how many families have to tell their story before, you know, there is action. I have a feeling, you know, single issue candidates in the past have done very well when people are completely disgusted and disgruntled by what they see as a failure to help. And I think that you only have to look at, you know, as Charles has said, Ali Farn topping the poll in Inishowen, and Joy as well, doing really, really well at the polls. There is an anger and a hunger for change, and I think that will be absolutely played out in the polls of the general election.
Do you have a view as to who that might cost? Because, as I say, you know, no one can presume anything, but, you know, the general consensus is that Thomas Pringle should be OK, Piers Doherty should be OK, Charlie McConnell, I don't know what the situation is. Is there one minute you think that, you know, Fianna Fáil should come out and support a minister in the area, and then other times you think, well, if they're going to try and hit someone, maybe they could try and hit him. I don't know. I'm on about the electorate, by the way. Who do you think might miss out if Charles is successful?
Like you, it's hard to say what way the wind will blow, but I do know that there was, rightly or wrongly, there was a lot of anger directed at Charlie McConnellogue in Inishowen around, you know, around this issue, because he was the government minister. He was, you know, there in government. It's hard to know. He is, at the end of the day, he is a government minister. That usually means that he can poll very well because he has, you know, the wind in his sails. It's hard to know, Greg. I feel that Charles, the wind is going to be behind, you know, the effective concrete here.
Whilst I referenced that Charles is from outside Inishowen, that being said, the entire party and those affected by it will be in behind him as well, because, you know, this is a crisis that sort of almost is above geography. Emma, how do you think things might play out?
I definitely think that the 100% redress campaign has gained great momentum, and rightly so. And the fact that the local elections took place in such recent times, obviously this year, that, you know, the party now at the grassroots level have traversed the county and, you know, have spread that message so widely, and so many of those candidates polled so well, including the likes of Ali, who topped the polls. So, you know, the groundwork has been done in many areas because of the local elections, which has preceded the general election here this year. So, and the anger is still there. Obviously, you know, I'm where I live myself, my own neighbour across the way is going to have her house demolished in the next 12 months. You know, it's just so wrong on so many levels, and yet people are still not getting it up at the high table in Dublin. So more power to you, Charles. Best wishes going forward. You know, we definitely want that vocal voice at the table for those that are affected and impacted by it. And, you know, the retribution or what they deserve, basically financially, to be able to restore the home that they have bought and paid for themselves.
I think one of the biggest variables in this election, or any election, and indeed, in fact, in the US election, is going to be turnout and who turns out and who bothers to vote. You know, if 50 or 60 people, percent of people are motivated to vote, they might be party members voting down certain party lines. I don't know who that might favour. If it's a particularly high turnout, again, it's hard to know who that might favour, Emma. But I think that's one of the big variables. Who can get people out on the day?
Well, I guess, you know, the stalwarts, the Fine Gaels, the Fianna Fáils all feel that the older, the elderly inverted commas, that generation are always vote givers. They're always constant there at the polling stations, and perhaps maybe the younger population that don't go out to turn up to vote. But I guess if you fire in your belly over something that's affecting your family or your immediate family, perhaps like the micro redress scheme, therefore that's going to encourage you even further. I suppose that's the political strategy with what date are we going to be on? Is it the 29th? Because I know that's Black Friday. That doesn't really impact older generation of voters because they're going to go out to vote, and the younger generation mightn't be that bothered. If you're a political strategist, would you think that way? Then they're toying with the idea of the 6th of December. It's the toy show. We can't do that either. Then again, that doesn't affect the older generation. So, you know, either's a win-win for Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, I think. But I guess it's everyone's duty, and, you know, it's your right. You need to go out to exercise it, and, you know, you can't sit and complain for the next few years if you don't get out and use your voice.
And maybe it's more fresh in the older generation's memories how hard the right for that vote was to win. I mean, it would be great, Charles, to see a big turnout. In any case, whether it favours you or favours Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael, whichever, it's up to the electorate. They decide. I don't really, have a view on that as such. It would just be good to see, you know, apathy left behind and says, right, you know, if we want to change something or if we want even to complain, you know, we need that mandate, and that mandate's getting out and voting in big numbers, whichever way people choose to.
Totally agree with you. And you've got to look at it like this. A year ago, this party was just in its infancy. We were sitting around the table, and in 1 year, we've had four councillors elected. We're running somebody for a TD. I'm the candidate. The party's behind me. The people are behind me, and they want me to be their voice. And it's democracy. You know, if they come out and they vote and they choose me to be their voice up in Dublin, I will give it everything I got, everything I got. We have been doing this. I'm personally suffering. This journey started for me in 2010. 14 years later, raising your children in a home that's not fit for purpose, damp, mold. You know, I sent a video on to you a number of years ago on Twitter, and you reposted it of it raining outside, and it was raining inside my house.
I remember it clearly. Yeah,
you know, so. You know, it just feels like it's...
It was raining indoors. What shocked me about that video, it was raining indoors. It was raining indoors every single time, Greg.
Yeah, okay. It rains outside. It rains in my house inside. Yeah. Every single time.
Kathy, this feels a bit insensitive moving on from Charles. Charles's experience there, but just actually an interesting comment as to Emma's analysis or observations on about who might vote or who might not vote. I mean, why does it seem to be so difficult to engage younger people? And I think when we say younger, what are we talking, 40 down, 35 down? I don't know what the I'm not thinking 18 and 19 and 20 year olds, you know, I'm thinking of slightly a larger swathe of the population. Why are so many people so inclined not to vote?
Well, we've seen in general elections that the voter turnout tends to be quite high, a bit higher than in referendums. I think the problem with referenda is that the vote gets lost because people don't understand the issue. Perhaps it hasn't been explained to them properly. And that has been the case in recent years. We've seen that the public hasn't been engaged and they just don't know. The general election, you know, it's pretty clear. You know, you have your issues, you have your, you know, single issue candidates, you have your, you know, political parties. It's maybe easier to get people out. I do think that it's very hard to engage people in politics. When you look at, like, how much did it cost to build a bike shed? How much does it cost to get our National Children's Hospital built? If people don't have a belief in politics can work to do the job that it's supposed to do, it is very, very hard to engage people. And I think that is a real problem. It's not just an optical problem, it's real.
Is this why we tend to find ourselves, like Marilyn McDonald's going to be in here a little later, and I want to hear her view, I want to hear her party's plans in terms of housing and health. But I've said it before in this program that I think a lot of people feel that the problems are so big, no one can fix them. And that's why we find ourselves focusing on easier to get your head around conversations, i.e. maybe the price of fuel, immigration. Do you know that kind of stuff? Because it seems more immediate and more fixable.
Yeah, I think, you know, we have to have a belief in that change can happen, in that, you know, a belief that things can get better, that our lives can get better, you know, in terms of housing, in terms of education, in terms of our healthcare. It's just right now, it feels like we're stuck, you know. It feels like housing is a disaster. It feels like our healthcare system is creaking under the weight of it, you know, and we're coming into winter flu season. You know, it's hard to keep positive about politics and get people really, really engaged. Yes. I'm a big believer, especially in local politics. I see it all around me. You know, there are people in communities up and down the country doing amazing things and changing things for the better in their local communities. And you can see that. And you have to, it's the small steps that make all of our lives better and the places that we live better. So I fundamentally agree in the power of politics. It's just right now, it feels like, what are our legislature doing?
Well, you see, I am actually just speaking as a regular person that uses all the facilities. I am a regular person, but I don't want to be accused of being biased. But just my point is I don't necessarily want to hear that Letterkenny General Hospital's budget's been increased by 25 million a year or something like that there. I kind of want to hear what they're going to do to fix the obvious problems, right, in terms of step-down care, home care packages. Why do we have 300, 400, 500 people waiting for home care packages or upgraded home care packages? There's no problems like that in Dublin. I want to hear how that gets fixed. That takes the pressure off the hospital. How we free up ED. You know, that kind of stuff. Throwing money at consultants that work 9 to 5 Monday to Friday, I ain't interested in that. I don't know what your views, Emma. And I'm not being harsh, and I have a lot of respect for those people, but I really would like to someone to explain to me structurally how things would be reformed, that we actually get value for money.
Yeah, well, I just noticed a headline there this morning about the additional funding that the government is going to try to increase college places for Irish students to go to Northern Ireland to increase their opportunities to train as nurses or additional services like OTs or speech and language therapists, which is great. But I think it was only like 161 places. I mean, that's a drop in the ocean for what we generally actually need. So I think a revised and, you know, a bigger strategy, what we're looking for to back to the whole, you know, there's speech and language therapists. I work in my own situation. I'm a primary school teacher. I know students that are waiting months and months, if not years on end, for speech and language therapy because there aren't the therapists there and they desperately need it. And yet if somebody goes on maternity leave or is on sick leave, there's no cover offered, therefore the caseload shared out. So I think a revitalised strategy of how we're going to bring those people back, how we're going to fill those places. You know, that's what makes a difference to the children that I work with or the families that listen to your show, Greg. You know, they want to know how it's going to impact them and their children and their community. And I guess that's, I suppose, the joy of the local county councillors. You know, they can see those kind of, not quick fixes, but they can see how they can make a difference on the ground, where it's much harder to do that when it's been drip-fed from Dublin the whole way up to us in the northwest.
Yep.
We just don't see it quickly.
All right, a caller says the Redress Party haven't done anything since being elected into the local council. What will they do at a national level? There's €499,000 available per house, which is enough for most people. That's a kind of a misunderstanding of the scheme, and you hear it quite a lot. In fact, I've got 3 or 4 messages that believe people are handed $500,000 to build a house, and that's not quite simply how it works. But they go on to say that Charlie McConnell-Logan has brought so much money into the county, he's a government minister and should not be called into question. Now, you can't call into question that A, he is a government minister, and B, he has brought a lot of money into the whether you disagree with his policies in terms of, you know, farming or the defective blocks or what have you. I think if you were to measure the money that's come into the county, it would be more and probably down to him. But just to that point, Redress Party, they've done nothing in the council. They'll do nothing at a national level. And $500,000 should be enough to build any house, Charles.
Absolute rubbish. Absolute rubbish. So, first of all, we have 4 councillors elected. We have tabled a no confidence motion in Darragh O'Brien. We're currently in the middle of changing the way our meetings are structured with the defective concrete committee. But we're making progress. But when you go on to the next thing about Charlie McConnell getting the money, okay, let me just dispel that myth, okay?
Just in relation to that, I do want to be a little bit careful because we are, although the election hasn't been called, we are in the mouth of an election, right?
Yes.
You are a candidate. Minister McConnell Ogue isn't here, right? So if you could generalise a little bit, just to be fair.
Okay, right. I'll be fair with Charlie. What I'm saying about Charlie is if Charlie or Joe Bloggs were in Fianna Fáil, they would bring in the exact same amount of money. Now, we're the forgotten county. Down in Dublin, they look up at us in Donegal and go, well, what can we do? What can we do here? What can we do there? And then they'll throw us the money and the headlines will say, Charlie McConlogue's done this, Charlie McConlogue's done that. Joe Bloggs has done this, Joe Bloggs has done that. He has done. You just need to look in Charlie's own, look at North Innishowen, the epicentre of this. What has he done for the people that are potentially going to be homeless? Absolutely
nothing. There are a lot of and it's awful to see. You are seeing shells of houses. You are seeing flattened houses. You are seeing construction ongoing. There are people, even, you know, figureheads within the movement that are availing of this scheme to rebuild their houses. Obviously, in some, you know, I think in many, if not most cases, with shortfalls and what have you. But, you know, on one hand, the scheme is useless. But on the other hand, it must be middling if people are availing of it. I'm just putting that to you, Charles.
Okay. So let's take it like this. We've got 62 houses completed, okay? We have 280-something waiting on commencement, okay? Now, I actually said this to Charlie when it was 58 houses at a meeting that he'd thrown in Convoy. I stood up at that meeting and I said to him, go end to end, show the people, go end to end. And he says, if we go end to end, we'll get nothing done. I says, you've got nothing done in 3 years. So I said, if you keep on going the way you're going, and I showed him the figures, for us to keep going at the current level we're going, by the time we get 5,000 houses completed, it would be 192 years. Mm. There's potentially 10,000 houses in Donegal that are affected.
I know that, but I mean, I'm not disputing it, but just have to be balanced here. You would presume it's not going to continue at the same pace, that it gets ramped up as we understand how this all works. But anyway, listen, I take your point. I just have to say that.
Can I just cut in and just say that? The 282 houses that are waiting on commencement, them houses have to go and get funding.
Yeah.
You know, they have to go and go into debt.
No, I get that. I know that personally. I know what you're on about. Finally, slightly on a lighter note before we take a break, Kathy. Hello, Greg. It says a lot about us as a society that the toy show would be a factor in deciding the date for our general election. But it is what it is. It's one of the biggest shows. People get geared up. There'll be, you know, close on a million, if not more, watching it. And people build up to it. And it's a lot of people see it as a family night's entertainment. I can understand why you might try and avoid it, Kathy.
I don't know, Greg. I mean, you still have plenty of time to get out and vote. I mean, you don't have to be in front of the TV set until like 9:30, you know.
Which is ridiculous that it starts so late anyway, but that's
I mean, unless
point.
You're going to be prepping all day. I mean, I don't know. You just have to show up in front of the TV. I mean, your vote is pretty simple and straightforward and, you know, can be done and dusted in, you know, 20 minutes. I don't see how it's a factor. All these nonsense things come into this, you know, around, and I actually think it's just, it muddies the water. Just give us the date and let's get on with it.
Okay, what do you think, Emma?
No, I think absolutely.
It shouldn't be a factor maybe, but it is a factor.
I don't know, it's a frenzy. I know that day, and there's pyjamas launched in the weeks beforehand and your goodie boxes and everything. Personally, don't buy into it. I do like to watch it, but I think at this stage, yeah, as Kathy said, we just need the date because I think that is even bringing voter apathy. This is dragging on. People just want to know, when's the deadline? Yeah. When are we working towards, I suppose, dangling this carrot? And, you know, are people canvassing? Are they not? Should they not be? Just let us go full throttle.
Yeah, I mean, people are knocking on doors, like. Right. Awful word, forgotten county. Can we ban that use? Plays up to the negative attention with Donegal, which Donegal hasn't and doesn't deserve. I think when we talk about it, we're talking about the fact that try getting a train in Donegal. The fact that we have the lowest disposable income, the fact that we have the lowest wages, the fact that there are no professors north of Sligo, the fact there are no cancer services specifically, north of a line from Dublin to Galway, the fact there's no motorway to Donegal. I think when we talk about the Forgotten County, it's that kind of stuff, and I don't think anyone can dispute that. And it also actually made its way into that film Saints and Sinners, which I thought was quite funny, if you haven't seen it. All right, if you want to grab a quick coffee, please do. We're going to be back in about 3.5 minutes with more from our Friday panel. It is the Friday panel. We're in the company of Charles Ward, 100% Redress Party candidate for the general election. Cathy Donaghy, who is a journalist and author of Finding My Way. What's the book about? I know it's quite obvious and I know myself, Cathy, but Finding My Wild, sorry. Talk to me about that book. That's about your move back home, is it?
Yeah, it's a memoir, Greg. So it's sort of a 10-year tranche of my own life. So it's sort of from leaving Dublin when my children were sort of just babies, really, and coming back home to Inishowen where I grew up. And it's sort of the 10 years after that. And it's about love, loss, grief, mothering, and I suppose most of all, finding your good enough self. Because I think we live in a world that tells us, you know, we're not good enough, and especially women and especially mothers. So it also deals with, you know, I talk a lot about my own experience with recurrent miscarriage and how that impacted my life hugely. And I suppose finding, you know, a way home. And when I talk about home, I don't just mean Inishowen, which is this place that I love that I call home. I also mean a home within myself, which was not that comfortable for a few years. So it's I suppose it's a journey of my life that I hope it has resonated with people, and
will continue to do so. Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You mentioned babies. The number of births in Ireland fell by 10% in 2022 compared to the previous year. The figures represent an annual birth rate of 10.5 per 1,000 people in the population. 10 years earlier, that's 2012, the annual birth rate was 15.6 per 1,000 people. A TPFR value of 2.1 is generally considered to be the level at which the population would replace itself in the long run, ignoring migration. It's currently at 1.5. Now, there's obvious reasons why we need to continue the population, because obviously we need a tax-paying base and we need people to look after people as they age, and we are growing older and hopefully growing older in greater health, but it's not always the concern. So I'll stick with you on this one, Cathy. How concerned should we be about this? You know, we aren't producing enough babies, and it sounds like a factor, and I don't mean it to, but we aren't producing enough babies to, you know, replace the population. It's not something I think should be ignored, should it?
No, I think that, you know, this is multifactorial. There's a lot of reasons for this that the sociologists would you know, suggest. I think that, you know, we live in a really uncertain times, you know, and I think that the state of the world, and I think that's definitely playing its part in terms of a lot of people are deciding, you know, children are not for me. Why would I bring children into this world? It's so messed up. You know, climate is also a reason. People are saying, you know, I'm not bringing children into this world. I'm going to do my part for climate change. Those numbers are growing. I think, though, we can't underestimate, you know, the housing crisis in this country is hitting people at a point in their lives when they're entering that space in their, I suppose, you know, if I think that the average age of an Irish woman now having a child is 33.
It's as high as it's ever been.
Yeah, so it's slightly older than it was a lot older than it was a decade ago. But you're looking at people, you know, coming out of college, starting to build a career, entering relationships. Also, it's coming at a time when they're hitting this crux of not being able to find a home, not being able to establish themselves in the way that our parents' generation may have found much more easily. Not that their lives were you know, perfect in every way, but I think that those fundamentals of going into the world, you know, finding the relationship, finding a home, those, and finding job stability, you know.
But even taking the 2 years off, effectively, it's not quite 2 years, but the 2 year commitment in your working life whilst you're trying to save for a mortgage, pay a mortgage, or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I think, Greg, I think there has to be a very big impact psychologically. And people talk about, you know, having babies and your fertility, and that things must be calm in your life, and things, you know, you've got to be in a good space psychologically. I think that, you know, especially in cities where people are living with their aging parents, you know, I think psychologically this is not an ideal place to be thinking about starting your family or extending your family or anything else. I think the impact of this psychological space that we're in is actually massive, you know, and we're not we're not getting into what's going on here and what this is doing to people in that age category. And I think that is something that in years to come, when the sociologists and psychologists write the books, they're going to be looking at the impact of these really big lifestyle issues on people's fertility.
Yeah, and I think they're actually really quite obvious when you work through them, Emma. I mean, you know, it's not something we can ignore. The bottom line is that you need a certain amount of new people, young people, to keep a society going, to be working, to be paying tax, and as I said earlier on, to be supporting people as they get older as well. We simply aren't producing those people at the moment.
Yeah, I guess. And obviously our bills going forward, government bills, healthcare bills, pension bills are only going to get larger as, you know, as we progress into the next few decades. So I totally get that. However, you know, I suppose it is that personal choice, and maybe you feel you need to have all your ducks in a row before you can bring any ducklings into the world. You know, people are living in maybe one bed apartments in Dublin and think this is not an environment I want to bring a child into, but they can't get out of that zone. They can't get out of that area, that, you know, any further
but,
up the
but
steps.
But that being said, that, and this is not being argumentative, like there are people listening to us that had 6, 7, 8 kids in a two-bedroomed house.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
we
too fussy
was
nowadays.
10
so.
In a three-bedroom
well,
house. He was probably seen as middle class. They were probably well off to think that there's 10 kids between three bedrooms, 12 adults or 12, you know, in the one house. But I think people's priorities have changed, their expectations, what they're happy to live with now. Yeah. You know, consider, I suppose, the birth rate was nearly 4% in 1972. It's, you know, a third of that now. Well, most recent figures, 2022, is 1.5%. But, you know, it's that personal choice. People, those that are able to fund a lifestyle that has those additional things in it, like holidays or extracurricular activities, you know, children are expensive. I think we can all agree on that. So therefore,
but
you
does
know,
that say from- anything about us that we... and this is, everyone's different, right? But just to the persons you might be talking of, what does that say about us is that, you know, there's a trend on social media, I'm 40, I don't need a babysitter, I can do whatever I want, right? But what does it say about us is that we sort of maybe don't want to sacrifice those holidays, or we don't want to live in slightly more cramped conditions. You know what I mean? That stuff is more important than perhaps raising a family. Or does it say anything at all?
I just think life has moved on, Greg. You know, it's 2024. People, we are used to that. We're used to maybe upgrading our cars, or we're used to that lifestyle that affords, if you're lucky enough to have that. Mm-hmm. I understand and appreciate it. You know, people are not fortunate, perhaps. And, you know, the cost of living crisis has never been higher for us. It's, you know, the cost of your basic groceries is astronomical. Put another two or three mouths to feed along with that. You know, shoes, clothing, it just all adds up. But I mean,
so this is why I'm skint.
I know, but I don't think for the sake of pleasing the government, people are going to start having 4, 5, and 6 children. You know, every person's situation is personal, and it's obviously a personal choice. But I mean, financially, it's within your own government, within your own house, trying to manage.
But we're
your
going
own
to have to. We're going to have people here. So we're going to have to at some point. And I think even the Chinese are kind of looking at this at this stage. They're loosening up their visa situation. We are going to have people, whether they're produced within Ireland or not. Again, horrible factory sound to it. They're going to have to come from somewhere.
Well, I guess those figures that, you know, that you have quoted, and, you know, that fall in births, that doesn't take into consideration immigration either. Yeah. So, you know, that's definitely, we have seen the impact of that over the past couple of years. And that is us. We are a multicultural society, and we are embracing that. We should be embracing it, too, you know. Yeah.
But in different cultures, the birth rate is much higher. You know, so I mean, that's not that that matters. It's just a fact. Charles, what's your view?
Well, my view, I have 4 kids.
Good man, you're doing your bit.
I'm doing my bit, trying. But it is financially, it's a struggle. Of course it is. Yeah. But when I look back to when I was a child, I was born in Armagh Island, and there's 2 schools in Armagh Island, and them schools were basically, there was 101 and maybe 120 in the other. Now they're down to very small figures in them 2 schools. And it's definitely, people are moving away to get work. They're building their lives in other, and they're going other directions. And when we were having our children, my wife is a teacher, and I was working down in Armagh, and we made a conscious decision that I would stay at home for the first 10 years and raise the children. So it was daddy daycare. And when I went to the school gate at the beginning of this, there was very few men. Now you can see it's reversing, and people are working different shifts, different shift patterns to try and fit in work, basically work around their children's schedules. But you can definitely see the impact it's had. It's a societal change where now it's becoming so expensive, you know, like, and then when you consider the other aspect of it, it's when they become teenagers onto college and you've got two people working, you're paying for everything. So you can see where there could be one small change would make the difference. If the stay-at-home parent could get a payment off the government as the same as a social welfare payment, but that would make the difference. Yeah. But if you two people are working and you don't qualify through means testing, you're basically living off one wage, and that's a big factor in any family.
Of course. Now, Kathy, to you, if you don't mind, just before the break, and this is just my assessment, it could be completely wrong, but I think sometimes if we want to know what flu we're going to get here in the winter, we look at what flu they had in Australia a few months ago. And I think sometimes what's happening now is we want to see the type of politics we have here. You almost have to see what's happening in America. And I sort of see the guns turning on women now at the moment, because if you look at the rhetoric from those that want to be in power, you know, childless cat lady, adjusting the laws in terms of, you know, women's healthcare. And I know some people don't like to see abortion as that, but others do. A big push and movement to a more conservative woman with the penny on cooking dinner for husband coming home. There's definitely a move towards the fingers starting to be pointed, I think, at women in this regard. And as I say, if that's what's happening in the US, it's not that long before it starts raising its head here. Do you think that is either A, happening, or B, likely to happening, that it'll be women that's going to be blamed for this down the line?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things here, Greg. And, you know, we're just coming back off that conversation about our falling birth rate. And I think this is relevant because, you know, Ireland was, you know, a very populous country. But we were a very populous country because, you know, the Catholic Church had its, you know, foot on women's throats around, you know, our fertility and lack of rights in this regard. So, you know, the social mores have changed. You know, we are allowed to take control of how many children we want, or things like that in our lives. And what's really scary, I think, is when you look at what's happening in America, is this rollback to this sort of trad wife phenomenon, where, you know, the woman as sort of the curlers in the hair for the husband coming back. There is, and J.D. Vance, the childless cat lady. And you know, I don't know where we're going with all of this. It's scary. It is scary. And I feel like, you know, what we're seeing is this misogynistic sort of rising culture. You know, I mean, Donald Trump in the last stages, the last gasp of this presidential campaign, I mean, this is, you know, he's a convicted sex abuser.
Can you just hold that thought for a second? Because we can talk a little bit about that, because this is the last Friday before the US elections. And I know there's an awful lot of stuff closer to home and what have you, but there is also a great deal of interest in that. So stay there. I'll take this break. We'll be back with more from our panel. And that's entertainment. A little later on, maybe you have a local event or a community event coming up over the weekend that you want me to give a plug. Please get it into us. I'll be more than happy to do that for you. A few callers actually saying the same. Children are not expensive. Parents make it expensive. People are too selfish now to have babies, says another. People had nothing years ago, but they did have big families. Hi, my daughter has 5 children and it's no bother to her. I'd say she'd have a few more. It's only as expensive as you make it yourself. Your child does not need everything that other ones has. Bring up your child as you see fit. Plenty of stuff is free, like walking at the beach, play parks, having a picnic. A bit of common sense, Greg. Separately, the toy show, I don't buy into it, so why should I watch it? How could it possibly affect polling day? Such nonsense. Not everyone lives in a PG movie, thankfully. They don't, but lots of families build up to it, and it is really, really significant. And you know what? The world is a complicated and oftentimes a dark place, and whether you like RT or not's besides the point, it does, you know, I think, bring a bit of light into people's lives, and for that reason alone, it's okay for me, or I think it's okay. I think contractors are price gouging DCB effective homes. Any views on that, Charles?
It's like everything else. It's open to abuse. Certain contractors will definitely be abusing it, and that's why we have to have a proper end-to-end scheme. You know, if you have an end-to-end scheme, government-led, then it eliminates that process. You know, the fact of the matter is, if you look at it, if you take a semi-detached house that's been condemned for demolition, then a few months later, the next-door neighbour's been condemned, the houses are getting built at different times, they're being separated. It just makes no economic sense.
Okay. We'll switch to the US elections. I want to return to Cathy. I just have a sense that it's going to be wider than the poll suggests. And I think Kamala Harris might... I think she's going to win it, to be honest. And as I say, I think it's going to be a bit controversial because it's probably not going to be as tight as the polls think right now. Cathy, obviously you're not a Donald Trump fan. Half of America is 90-plus Americans. You know, we welcome half of them over here every year. But be that as it may, I got the impression that you're keen to see Kamala Harris pull through.
I think I'm not... actually that overly impressed with her. I don't think that she's been a stellar performer in the campaign. But, you know, when you look at the opposition, I think you have to say, yeah, she would at least be a safe pair of hands rather than, you know, the presidency going to someone who is utterly repugnant, you know. And, you know, I just can't get my head around it, to be honest with you, Greg. I think you're right about, you know, maybe there's hope. I hope that there's hope here that Kamala Harris will actually win. I think I read a piece yesterday which suggested, and it ties into the point you were making earlier about, you know, women and women voters, and it was suggesting that a lot of women are not being upfront about how they're going to vote, and they're actually keeping that even from their husbands because there is this sort of, it's growing fear around, you know, how they're going to vote, which I think is kind of, it's kind of crazy, but it might feed into this idea that perhaps the polls, perhaps she will get this huge swing if the woman come out. And, you know, I think he did a lot of damage the other day when he said, you know, he was talking about, you know, I'll protect you whether you want me to or not, you know, which is like, I mean, you know, he is, we know that 16 women have come out and accused him of sexual assault. And this just says whether you want to be protected or not. I mean, it's misogyny on a grand scale. I hope that, you know, all those people, you know, in marginalized communities, you know, like Black communities, like the Hispanic communities, they look at what he's done. His
I would find it hard to breathe. You know, Elon Musk's one of his biggest supporters now. I think he's got like 14 kids by 5 different women, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying there's anything particularly wrong with that, but, you know, he has a certain view of women's role in society. Tucker Carlson, J.D. Vance, who talked of cat ladies, childless cat ladies. I just would be surprised for any women to be able to park that. That being said, I'd find it very difficult to park Biden and Kamala Harris's opinion on Gaza, for instance, and their lack of action in that regard, and vote for them. You know what I mean? There is not a third alternative. But I mean,
yeah.
I would feel I'm being complicit in what's happening in the Middle East in casting a vote for her too.
I know, and Greg, you're right about Gaza. I mean, I think the US has been, their stance on Gaza has been, in my view, utterly cowardly. You know, what has happened here and what we've seen every day, what's happening in Gaza. But I think under Trump, it will be much worse. He's already said that he will let Benjamin Netanyahu finish the job. That's the words. Maybe, you know, if there's any hope in this, is that America was always that sort of white light, that lighthouse that could be guaranteed.
Have they really? No, I'm not sure.
I think they have really. They have in the past. If the Gulf,
I think when it suited them, they backed the team. They backed the team they want to win. But yeah, listen, anyway, that's just difference of opinion. You are equally as correct as I might be, Charles. I mean, listen, we're watching on because we're waiting for a date ourselves, and I know there's much bigger issues closer to home. But as I said earlier on, it's a little bit like the toy show, isn't it? We distract ourselves sometimes looking at different things. What do you think of what's going on over in the US now? And I've yet to meet someone who'll come on and say they support Donald Trump. As I say, half of America do, but I can't find one of them. Go ahead, Charles.
Yeah. Well, you see, I think America's fallen so high off the pedestal that the world had it in, that we see it now with social media. We see the truth. We see certain aspects of it that are unsavory. You know, Donald Trump has come on and he's promising tax cuts, America first, and You know, people are looking at that and going, yeah, yeah. I have family members in America that are split. They're divided, you know. And I'd just like to say, people need to look at the history of America. It's 1776. They've been at war, basically, for most of that time. I think there's a bit, maybe 30 years of that where they've never been in some kind of conflict. And it actually goes into the US Senate and their form of parliament, where they have people elected that are shareholders in weaponry. And it's just, it's like war makes money. And how, as a nation, can you promote peace when you're selling weapons that are destroying people all around the world?
And signing them too, which I think is horrendous.
Signing them, that's disgusting.
You know, children. What I mean, we're speaking now, I think it's 80 women and children destroyed in central Gaza last night. 80 women and children. Emma, your view just on the US elections, I sense you're not a Donald Trump fan. I can't see a MAGA hat on your head.
No, not at all. I'm wearing blue today. Kamala all the way. Although my brother-in-law is a staunch Trump supporter and lives in New York. I just don't get my head around it at all. But going back to the Gaza, I just wonder if the US administration would they have been as lenient or as supportive if it wasn't an election year. You know, maybe if it was year one of a new term of office.
But even in that, it's so repulsive to me, it puts me off.
Oh, it is absolutely disgusting. But, you know, the Jewish vote is strong and holds a lot of power in America. So that, I know political strategists will be considering that. As it comes, like, I really cross and everything. I'm totally, cannot get enough of US coverage at the moment, right back to the conventions all throughout the summer. But my fear is if Kamala does win next week, what the retribution, what's going to happen from the Trump supporters. You know, that makes me really anxious.
Well, the ground is already being set, isn't it? I know they're already talking about it being fiddled in Pennsylvania. So we know it's not going to be, it's transfer of power, but we know it's not going to be accepted, you know, if Trump loses
at all.
Because I say that the seeds are already being sown for that.
Yeah, and Trump himself from the top up is saying he's not going to accept it. And therefore, a lot of his supporters are quite radicalised, perhaps. You know, they're just extremists that I do worry what is going to lead in the weeks ahead.
Okay.
Should the Democrats succeed next week, which hopefully they will.
Right, we'll see. Emma McGrath, teacher, co-director of McGrath School of Speech and Drama. Great to see you. Thanks so much
for your
time.
Greg,
take care of yourself. Charles Ward, thank you very much indeed. Been nice having you on the programme. Good luck in the month ahead. And I'll say the same to anyone who has put themselves forward as a candidate. It's one thing talking, it's another thing putting your head above the parapet there and trying to get it done. And as I say, that doesn't matter if you're Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Sinn Féin, independent, it doesn't matter. It's impressive. Well done, Charles. Thanks for that. Take care of yourself. Cathy, last but not least, the old usual line. Have a great weekend. Always a pleasure to have you on the programme.
Thank you, Greg.
Take care of yourself. Okay, thank you so much indeed. Right, we're going to take a break for the news and obituary notices coming up after. We'll be in conversation with Mary Lou McDonald, the Sinn Féin leader, TD, of course. That's just part of some of the stuff. We've also got a very exciting launch. That word Christmas is going to be used. Let me put it to you like that. Okay, that's all coming up, as I say, after we take this quick break.